Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. A lifetime of encounters. When I was a child, my parents and my three other siblings used to live in a very small one-story house. My mother has told me that in that house there was a spirit of an old sailor who used to hit her and leave bruises on her arms whenever she went to do laundry. She also said there was a lady spirit who left a smell of lavender perfume wherever she was, and that this female spirit would sing my oldest sister to sleep at night. My mother also told me that this lady got rid of the sailor one night in a fit of flying pots and pans. I have no recollection of this time period, so I am not wholly a believer in what my mother says. I do remember my experience starting around the time I was 4 or 5 years old. One night, I was sitting in the living room watching TV with my mother. From the living room, walking towards the back of the house, was the dining room, which was converted into a weight room. Adjacent to that was my second oldest sister's room, with a doorway covered by a sheet. There were no doors to rooms in the house except to my parents' room and the two bathrooms. As I was watching TV, I happened to look into the dining room and saw a lady dressed in a wedding-type gown glide across the room and enter my sister's room. The woman's skin was also white along with her hair. As she entered my sister's room, the sheet covering the doorway moved slightly. I got up to investigate, but there wasn't anyone in the room. My mother didn't see anyone, but years later, she told me that the spirit of a murdered bride was stuck in our house. Off to the left of the weight room was another room we called the green dining room, and adjacent to that room was our kitchen that had a door leading out to the backyard. Next to the kitchen was the bathroom. Another time, the only time I had a witness to one of my experiences, my sister and I were sitting watching TV during the day in the living room. We both heard footsteps as though my father was coming in from the kitchen. They stopped by the weight room doorway entrance to the living room. Then we both saw an image of our father standing at the doorway looking in on us. I saw what appeared to be a photo negative of my father, when my sister said she saw a shadow figure of my father. Another incident, which was quite embarrassing, happened one night while I was going to the bathroom. I left the door partway open because it was only me, my sister, and my father at home. So if you were to look up, you could see into the kitchen between the door and the door frame. I had been in the bathroom for about 10 minutes when I happened to look up and into the kitchen. The shadow of a young boy passed by quickly, and I thought maybe it was my sister and I wasn't seeing things too well. I called her name, but she didn't answer. Then it sounded as if the doorknob had been taken a hold of. I didn't wait to see what was going to happen next. I started to scream my sister's name at the top of my lungs until she came in. She thought I was going to die or something. That is how terrified I sounded. I even freaked out my dad. My sister told me that she was just about to enter the kitchen when I started screaming her name. My mother had told me previously to this incident that there was a spirit of a little boy who liked to slam the bathroom door shut if you left it open just a little bit. Also, many times I would see people out of the corner of my eye, but when I would turn, they would disappear. I would hear my name being called when there was no one there. I constantly heard the back door opening and someone entering the house, but there was never anyone there. One time, I was so convinced someone had come in, I always locked the door when I got home, that I grabbed my brother's baseball bat from upstairs and went downstairs to investigate. When I got to the kitchen after searching the rest of the house, I found the door to be still locked. I saw someone resembling my brother run down the driveway, but when I went outside, there was no one there. I even ran to the front of the house to look out the windows, and there was no one in sight. My brother came home about an hour later directly from school. I just hated being a latchkey kid, and now you understand why. A ghost named Dan. I want to tell you about how I grew up in a haunted house. My parents moved there before I was born and still live in the same house. My mother hears doors close all day long, though no doors will actually be closed. She hears lots of strange things. I will feel presence in the house. I don't know if there is one spirit or many. I have felt things touching me. Sometimes they would feel like hands, but sometimes it would be almost like a bar, cylindrical and kind of heavy. I would not always be asleep when I felt these, at least once that I can remember. I was in the den watching TV when I felt the bar move along my leg, like it was rolling slowly back and forth. We also have had the corner of the eye sightings, but never anything really material. I came to call the ghost Dan, mostly because I didn't know anyone by that name. One time I was falling asleep and I heard a stack of my papers crash to the floor. I said, "Dan, I didn't do that and I'm not picking it up." Then I fell asleep. In the morning, there were no papers on the floor. Dan seemed to be just making noises mostly. Our kitchen had a tile countertop and we used plastic glasses. The sound of those glasses moving across the counter were unmistakable and could be heard through the house, especially when everything was quiet. At night, even though I knew no one was up, I could hear the glasses go across the counter and the kitchen chairs being moved on the kitchen floor. My parents both heard the distinct sounds of the wood-burning stove being opened, the poker being moved from the holder, the fire being poked, the poker replaced, and the door being shut back. All these things were very, very distinctive sounds. My parents were educated, logical people, but they both heard it. They thought I had snuck up to watch TV, but they checked and I was a sound asleep. Even people we hadn't told any stories to would comment on feeling creepy in the basement. Like at my sister's sleepovers, there were too many girls for everyone to sleep upstairs, so they all had sleeping bags downstairs. Without even starting ghost stories, they commented on feeling something down there. I don't think Dan is evil at all. If I were at home alone and scared of the noises in the house, I would tell Dan I was scared to be alone and ask him not to scare me with any strange noises. I wouldn't hear any all night. I'm not sure, however, that he was the only ghost. I would definitely feel threatened and frightened at times. I could feel a presence, and maybe I overreacted to the feeling and felt threatened. One time, I was awakened from a deep sleep by pressure on my shoulders and at my side. It was as if a dog were standing over me. I thought that my old dog had finally died and was saying goodbye, but I was terrified. I tried to cry out, but couldn't. When I finally could get an audible squeak out from my mother, it went away immediately. My dog was still alive. I don't know what it was. I don't know what gifts I have in the way of the supernatural. I have dreams that come true. I sometimes know things I have no way of knowing, and I feel certain presences occasionally. They make me uneasy, and I wish that I could either not feel them or feel at ease with them. I knew there was something in my house and was sensitive to that. Ouija boards and movies like the Amityville Horror terrified me. My sister used a Ouija board in my room once, and I never wanted to touch one again. I was talking to my mother now about how our house goes, and she said that she had also felt things touch her, especially in bed at night. We both have felt things move on the bed. She said that she has felt like there was someone on top, keeping her from getting up. She says she still hears things, but they are always at the other end of the house. My sister says she has never had any experiences, and she thinks that maybe I'm making it up. Not a lie, but like a hypochondriac can really make themselves sick. I told her that I think I'm just more sensitive to these things. I find it unlikely that my mother and I would make up the same kind of experiences separately. We never discussed them until I was older and never really talked about them much at all. I didn't know until the other night that she felt pressure while being held down in bed. My sister did say that she had felt pressure, but not necessarily just at my parents' house. She considers it a freaky nerve thing, her body rather than her mind playing tricks on her. She never considered the possibility of a supernatural explanation for it. I conceded to her that the pressure could just be a nerve reaction of some kind, but the sounds went on for years. I even discarded a lot of the shapes I would see in the hall outside my door as being due to the unclearness of night vision and childhood imagination. But that doesn't explain the happenings when I was a teenager and awake in broad daylight. And I know that I was being haunted. The Old Farmhouse. The setting is an old farmhouse in Ontario, Canada. This took place in December of 1982 while I was working with a friend there, looking after poultry, sheep, and goats. The owner was a bookkeeper for a Toronto firm and had hired us to stay on his hobby farm and run it. The weather had been very mild, so much so that my buddy had been able to continue plowing, and having a full moon helping light the field was a great benefit to us. After a full day, which had commenced at 5 a.m., we went through to about 1 a.m., and then we finally loaded up the old wood-burning furnace in the basement and retired to our rooms. I have a nasty habit of having to eat a bit before turning out the light, and did so for about 20 minutes, then turned out the light. The full moon seemed to keep the room well lighted, and I soon drifted off. I awoke to find a girl standing beside my bed, dressed in a long nightgown, and I was seeing through her. The moon had shifted position in the sky, and I knew that a couple of hours had passed since I went to sleep. The wallpaper in the room, which had been striped, was now floral print, roses, I think. I'd experienced ghosts before and was not frightened, and the sad look on her face moved me to ask her what she wanted. She looked right at me, and it seemed strange that her lips never moved, but I learned her whole story. This is the tale that she gave me. It seems that her and her younger sister had been orphaned and sent to live with her aunt and uncle on this farm. I was now sleeping in the room she had occupied. It seemed the uncle had started an incestuous relationship with her and had threatened to turn her and her sister out if she ever told anyone, and also promised not to touch the younger sister if she cooperated. That was until the younger sister became pregnant by him, at which time the two girls found that he'd been using the same story on them both. The sisters had no idea as to how their uncle would take the news, never mind the aunt, who, though having her suspicions, turned a blind eye towards the whole thing. The story became a little blurry here, as if I couldn't receive the information quick enough, but the next part was as clear as a December night it was told in. The uncle killed both of them and buried them in the basement. He told his wife and the neighbors that they had run off with some no good out west somewhere, and as far as he was concerned, it was good riddance. At this time, the girls started to fade slowly, and I watched amazement as the wallpaper started to change back to its stripes. The floral pattern faded, and as quickly as it did, the stripes appeared. The moon hadn't changed position much, and I was sitting up in bed. I did not awaken this way. I was already awake. I went down to the basement and found the place that the girl had indicated to me. The poured concrete floor was covered with dirt and bits of wood, but a quick sweep with a broom soon showed a patch where the floor had been poorly repaired, right at the bottom of the stairs in front of the old furnace. I returned to my bed, thinking that it was a strange thing to have happened, and went to sleep. I talked to my buddy about what had happened in the morning, and he thought it was a bit strange, but he also knew that I wouldn't make something like this up. We wondered if the boss would let us dig up the floor just to satisfy our curiosity, but thought that we might go ahead on our own and repair the damages through the week. I began having second thoughts about it, though. Did I really want to find a couple of skeletons buried there? And how would I explain how I knew they were there to anyone? And if we found nothing, I would have looked like a person whose imagination had overpowered his good sense and had become obsessed with nightmares. I always wondered if there was a tale of two girls, one about 16, the other 14, who during the 1920s had left the area to go out west and were never heard from again. I also wonder what would happen if I returned to the old house and somehow talked the owner into allowing me to dig up part of his basement. I'd probably be run off with a shotgun. I also wondered if I let down a spirit who had reached beyond the grave attempting to get the truth out. If I have, I hope she forgives me. This story is true. And as to whether those two girls were buried in the basement, that I never found out about. The Haunted Beach House. When I was 15 years old, my parents rented a beach house from a friend at work. They lived in New Jersey, and the shore was a place to go. The house was in Bricktown, a small community with its own private beach. It was not too far from Seaside. The house was situated right at the bay, about 100 feet, and you'd have your own crabbing dock. It was located on a dead-end street, so the evenings were very quiet. We arrived late, close to midnight, and it was very quiet. You entered the house from the back. The front of the house was built facing the bay. The first room was a guest room of sorts. It was a small room, maybe 8 feet by 8 feet. There was a hallway towards the far right wall. The kitchen door was on the right side, and a little bit further, the door for the only bathroom was on the left. Facing the bathroom door was a cellar door on the opposite side of the hallway. There was always a darkness about this area. I can't remember if it was lighted, but there was always a very dark patch there. The hallway was only 6 or 7 feet in length, not much at all. You walked right into the family room. It had a two-story ceiling, a frame with a boulder fireplace to your right. The window surrounded the living room, giving you a very open feeling. The unusual aspect of the room was the stair leading up, and it was covered. When you were standing and looking towards the hallway, you saw the second floor with the two-bedroom doors side by side. The entrance of the stairs was cut in the wall and situated in the left corner of the room. It was decorated in a sailor or sea theme. It was pleasing and well-worn. When we arrived, my parents and my sister went directly through the house and outside to look at the bay. I do not know why, but I stayed inside alone. I sat in a chair facing the second floor when I felt a vibration, a presence. I don't know what to call it. It was in the far right corner of the narrow catwalk where the bedrooms were. The hair on the back of my neck stood up. The feeling of fear was so strong I left to join my family outside. I went directly to my mother and asked if this house was haunted. She replied, "How did you know?" My mother was very intelligent, and she also had a very open mind. She had come when she was very young, in her mid-20s, from Germany. Most of her family history was wiped out during World War II. There isn't much more I remember about my first trip other than my mom mentioning pictures were taken in the house by other guests who caught a hazy shape on the film. You see, the previous owner was a doctor who specialized in cancer research. His daughter, ironically, was diagnosed with leukemia. She was 16 years old when she died. The really interesting things happened when we returned the following year. I brought a friend, Monica, and her boyfriend down with us. Now, I did tell her there was something there, but she really did not believe in the beginning. The first night, Monica and I slept in the bedroom upstairs, right next to my parents. It was late, and we were cutting up, laughing, had a case of the giggles. Around midnight, both of us decided it was time to sleep. I was on the inside of the bed, and she was right next to the door. It was not closed all the way. After turning off the lights, not seconds later, we both heard creaking on the stairs, then a knock on our door. We were staring at the door, hearing it and not seeing anything. Let's say we both went white and agreed it was time to go downstairs. After kicking her boyfriend out of the bed in the guest room, we both went to sleep. I slowly woke, hearing a booming noise like someone was banging on the pipes. Then the old alarm clock on top of the refrigerator blasted music. The channels began to change very quickly, as though someone was turning the knob from one side to the other. We stayed in bed. I was frozen. Her boyfriend got up and turned it off. He never accepted what happened. That morning, when I went into the kitchen, I noticed it was unplugged. I asked him if he had done that, and he said no. I asked my mother, who also heard it. She stated no. Neither did my father. It was never plugged in. There was always a feeling of being watched. A prickle on the neck, tensing of the muscles. You would look around and nobody was there. What stood out is when I was walking to the bathroom, I would move quickly through the hallway. It felt like there was a weight on my shoulders. I could never look at the basement door. Even when my father needed my help, I couldn't go down the stairs. The next year, I did tell the friends that I was taking with me about all the ghostly episodes in the house. But guess what? When we got there, they were disappointed. When I walked through the door, it felt empty. Nothing happened. We had a great time, but it was just a house now. My mother told me something interesting after we returned home. Before we went down for the last time, the owners had cleaned up the basement. They found much of the previous daughter's possessions there and got rid of it. What to make of it? I don't know. I guess that once her things were thrown out, that poor girl could finally rest in peace. The Old Strum House. The Old Strum place sat on a hill about 5 miles south of Cornelius, Oregon. It was built by an old German and his family from the old country. It had clapboard siding, painted white, lots of windows. It had a huge barn on the place that sat below the house amid huge cedar firs and pine trees that sighed in the wind. I first saw the old house in the last part of 1937. The Depression was still rampant in the land, and so many were out of work. But if you could get out of town and back to the land, there was always nuts, fruits, and berries to work in and put up for the winter at a minimal cost. There was always empty houses or woodcutter shacks, empty because people had left to go elsewhere, or some farmer had bought or leased land and didn't need the house that went with it. Most were not in bad shape. Usually a stove had been left along with a rough-hewn table, some benches and orange crates for cupboards, nailed to the walls, one made out pretty well. No one seemed to be on window-breaking binges, so the windows were usually intact. With flour sack curtains, a good floor scrubbing, fire in a stove, and a pot of beans cooking, they were a haven to crawl into, and it felt like home. Most everyone took care of the property and left it as neat, or more so than when they moved in. Sure beat a hole-in-the-wall apartment or a tar paper or corrugated shack near the dumps. This district was called Iowa Hill District. It was strictly a German Lutheran community. We sure needed a place to stay. We had a baby girl and my husband could cut wood if we could find a place to stay. We moved into the old Storm place after getting permission from the owner of a farm about a mile and a half away and farmed this place. We asked about the amount of rent he wanted, but to our amazement, he could hardly keep a grin off his face or a twinkle from his eye, like he had some secret, and he said he didn't want any rent, as we wouldn't be there for very long anyway. He said sure, we could live there, if we could stand it. Up the road the other way lived a bachelor, a thick-set German who only laughed when we told him we were moving in, and he wanted to know how long we were staying. We couldn't figure out what the joke was, but shrugged it all off and moved in. Everyone we saw would say incredulously, "You're moving into the old Storm house?" and looked at us as if we were either too young or too foolish to catch on. We met many with just open stares, embarrassed grins, or just a shake of the head. Evidently, the house was well known. There was my husband and I, our little girl, and a cousin or brother who stayed with us, often by turns, who would come to help us cut wood a while. They used one of the old drying saws, you know, the ones you see in museums, and were paid $2.50 a cord, cut, delivered, and stacked. This was divided two and sometimes three ways, but you could keep a few chickens, and the neighbors gave us milk for milking his cow when he had to be gone. The place looked like a castle, as we sure needed a place to stay with a baby, and down to our last nickel, you might say. My husband's cousin had an old car put together, sometimes with baling wire, so we had transportation. Our water came from an old pump by the side of the house, which we had to carry in for drinking, washing, scrubbing floors, cooking, canning, and baths, and of course had to be heated on the cook stove. The well was a deep one and echoed many sounds like footsteps walking that never appeared. We dismissed many sounds as just being made by the well. We did begin to hear that no one ever lived there very long. A cousin of my husband and her family stayed a short time before moving to the North Plains area. Their names were John and Lita. They never would talk about the place, but they did say no member of the family stayed alone, and one time Lita was bitten by a rat as she laid in the bed with a small baby. They used the bedroom off the front room. While we were there, we hardly ever used the front door, even the front part of the house, as the back door seemed more convenient to the kitchen, woodshed, and all. We began to hear stories, mostly from our bachelor German neighbor, that the Strums had been bootleggers, a man was killed on the stairway leading upstairs, and that there were trap doors in some of the rooms. The bloodstains were still visible on the steps, four or five steps up, and also where the blood spilled on the floor. We did find three trap doors that led to nice dugout places below the floors. We kept being told after we moved, no one would live there ever, but we were young and brave, and who believed in ghosts anyway? And who worries when you're young? We moved in with little or no furniture, using what we could find, and besides, we decided after being around, the other part of the house wasn't needed, and it wasn't a very friendly part anyway. For a while, everything went along all right. Being early summer, we were out of doors a lot, but as it got on towards fall, we began to notice odd noises. The first seemed to be these resounding footsteps that could be heard on the north side of the house, where the pump sat. I would run out to meet whoever was there, glad for any company at the farm, were a long way apart in those days, and no one would be there. Since the farms were 2 to 3 miles apart, we couldn't see how the footsteps could echo so. No one seemed to be walking much anyway. The next incident was the sound of someone chopping wood in the woodshed, usually in the afternoon. It would be the sound of measured chopping, and I would dash out thinking my husband had come home early. If the drag saw was broken down, often his cousin would go to town for parts and my husband would come home and cut wood for the wood range and heater, stove in the dining room. When I'd get to the woodshed, the chopping would stop and start up again when I got back to the house. So I'd think he'd just stepped outside for a minute and go running out again when the chopping started up again. This would go on and on until it seemed I would wear my legs out. This would go on for days, lasting an hour or so every afternoon, and then maybe go weeks before it would start up again, always in the afternoons only. This went on as long as we lived there. We never did figure out an explanation for this. There were the sound of men's footsteps that went to the stairs where the blood spots were, stopped, and walked on into the living room we used as our front room. This would go on for some time, and then quite a while would pass before he would be back again. He seemed to end his walk at the trap door in the room. That trap door was very active all the time we lived there. I often wondered if someone was buried there. Every afternoon, without fail, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, no matter what you were doing, your head would automatically jerk towards the corner of that trap door. It was a forced reaction, and you couldn't keep from doing it. It became so routine, we just accepted it. We never told anyone about this, as we liked to see if it affected everyone the same way. It would, and they would get a funny look on their face and say they had to be going. No one ever didn't jerk and stare at the trap door. The trap door was cut in such a way that if you didn't know about it, you didn't see it, and we didn't bother to tell anyone about it. We were having a good time with it and thought it was fun. After we moved, a few people asked us about it, and being young and full of mischief, sometimes we told them, no, we didn't notice anything. But once a month, when there was a full moon shining over the fields and trees, different footsteps walked from the back door through the kitchen, living room, and onto the south bedroom, where they seemed to stand and look out the window. These are the steps of a young girl who seemed to be barefoot, like the sound of bare feet sticking to the floor and then moving on across the room. Was she waiting for a lover who never returned or was killed? The men used to follow the steps one by one, and they didn't stop until they got to the window. She's the only one we ever saw, like the apparition, barefoot and dressed in a long black cape. We saw her twice. One night, one of my husband's cousins was coming to spend the night. Ruby was to stop at our sister's place down below the hill from us, have supper and visit, and then come up to spend the night. It got later and later, and she hadn't arrived, so we went to bed, having told her to just come in and go to bed when she got back. Sometime after midnight, the back door opened softly. Thinking it was Ruby, I didn't get up. The bedroom was long, with a cot at the far end. As she seemed to stop or pause at the doorway, I whispered, "Come in, Ruby, and crawl in." There wasn't any electricity, and the moonlight was shining in the window, so I didn't light the lamp. She stood in the doorway in her long black coat or cape, so I whispered again louder, 2 or 3 times. Still, there was no movement, and I was getting chills up my back. I woke my husband saying, "There's someone standing there, and they won't answer." He saw her standing there and swung at her with his fist. She disappeared. Ruby never did come. She had played cards and talked until so late, she just made a bed on the floor and slept there. We never told the rest about the barefoot girl. Many footsteps walked to the one trap door, but the other main one never seemed to have any disturbances. We dried walnuts upstairs in the unfinished part, and the rats did roll walnuts across the floor to the edge, and they rolled down between the walls. We know this accounted for some noises we heard, at least the ones upstairs. Some evenings we lit the kerosene lamp, a strange wind would come in the house and blow the lamp out. We'd go outside to see if it were windy, and the air would be strangely still. Go back and light the lamp, and the wind would blow it out time and time again. This would happen for up to an hour at a time, and then back to normal. My little girl, who was a little over 2 by this time, would be playing with her toys or dolls and would stop her play and jerk around and look intently at something. I'd watch her so she didn't know it, and she would just look for a while and then go back to playing. At the time, we'd laugh and say, "Oscar's back with absolutely no fear." We liked it there with our ghosts. Now, I wouldn't stay in that place. One afternoon, Mr. Eichson said he'd be up to pick up some of the old prune dryers in the prune drying shed on the place. We told him we'd help load them. We were late getting back from milking, and it was one of the evenings when the wind kept blowing out the lamps. Hearing pounding in the shed, my brother-in-law said he'd go help Mr. Eichson with the dryers as it was getting pretty dark. When he got there, there wasn't anyone there. When he got back to the house, you could hear the trays being lifted, pounding, and footsteps. Each time they went down, the noise stopped, and no one was there. Come back to the house and it all started again. This and the lamps blowing out went on for about an hour. All at once, the wind and noises were gone, and everything was normal. The next day, we asked Mr. Eichson if he'd come to get the dryer trays, and he said no, he had found enough at his place and didn't need them. Again, we didn't tell anyone of this. It was one time I was uneasy there. One time we had a party with food and drinks and company. It wasn't long until the guests came and told us that they were leaving. If we wanted to stay in such a weird place, go ahead, but they were leaving. We asked them what was the matter. No one would say anything. We were surprised, as we had told our occupants to behave themselves as we were having company, but the party broke up early, and their parting shot was, if we ever moved, and fight them again, but not to that place ever. We were surprised, as we never told anything to anyone, partly because we were afraid they'd think we were ready for the funny farm, and partly because we enjoyed our secrets. Being young and dumb, we thought it was hilarious and drank to Oscar and all the other shady men who lived there with us. I never heard of a Mrs. Strum, but there were signs of a garden plot, a grape patch, and clothesline. The barn was the only place I was afraid of. It was a beautiful big barn, and I loved barns. Since I had read and heard about hobos or other homeless people scaring intruders away from the place they wanted to occupy, I went to look and see if this was the case of the barn. On a calm, sunny day, if I entered the barn, gates and partitions would slam shut with such force they would almost hit me. It was such force it would scare the living daylights out of me. There were no spring hinges or anything like that that would make them do this. No matter when I went down there, this would happen. The pines were so sad sounding, they sighed and sobbed in the breeze. Since the men were away a lot, I put up with the ghost more than they did. I did stay alone a few times at night, but wasn't afraid, except at the barn. The summer of 1939, I had a baby boy, and there seemed to be less ghostly going-ons. Maybe we were just happy with the baby, and I was so busy with both children and lots of washing to do on the washboard, and did it mainly outside during the summer. Toward fall, my husband went to work for a Mr. Arnold, and since he had a woodcutter's cabin on the place, he came up the hill and insisted we get out of the storm place. He seemed really concerned. Again, no explanation, and we gave none. As we drove away, I looked back and thought I saw movement at the window. One day, a neighbor came by on horseback and said he was going to go look around the old storm place and asked if we'd live there. He came back in a couple of hours, hair unruly and visibly shaken. He asked if we'd really lived in that place. He had spent some time looking at some of the old magazines in the upstairs, but wouldn't say anything else except he'd never lived there. In fact, he'd never so much as set foot in there again. Playing dumb, I asked why, as I wanted to hear someone else's version of the place, but all he'd do is shake his head as he rode on. And what happened to the old storm place? A great blaze appeared one day on top of the lonely hill, and the old house and perhaps all the ghosts went up in smoke. Or did they all go live in the barn? The house didn't burn accidentally. The men of the neighborhood community got together and burnt it down. They seemed to know a good deal about the strange going-ons that went on in that old house, but none would really speak of it, maybe feeling a little foolish if it were voiced aloud, and would tolerate no more of that place. I never went back after the house burned. I just couldn't. We all got along fine in the house together and lived together quite well. They tolerated us, but no one else could manage them. Perhaps they liked us, who knows? Being older and looking back, I couldn't or wouldn't have stayed there now, as I'd have been scared to death. I never talked about it much and now have written it down. My daughter remembers it very faintly. She was 3 when we left and remembers the good things. A puppy, a pet pig, going for walks and picking the wildflowers, and who knows what friends she had with Oscar and all those other mysterious spirits that inhabited the old storm place.